ever finish like an amazing book and just wish you had somebody to like really unpack it with? That's kind of what we're doing here. You guys sent in these excerpts from Dr. Pam's DSM study session, and we're going to break it down. It's like your cheat sheet to mental health diagnoses.
I think that's a great way to put it, yeah. And one thing that I find so interesting is how Dr. Pam, she really emphasizes that time frame, you know, like how long have you been experiencing these symptoms? Because it's not just about the symptoms themselves, it's about the duration, right?
Totally. Like, oh, this has been like, a couple days versus this has been weeks or months. Big difference. And it reminds me of that aha moment I had when she was talking about major depressive disorder and how it's not just feeling down, it's having these really debilitating symptoms. And for 2 weeks or more.
And it's so helpful how she brings in those real-life examples, like that story about her client whose mother had bipolar disorder, and how she would just like on a whim whisk her off on these extravagant trips to like Paris and London.
Oh, wow.
But then after all that excitement, she would just crash into this deep depression for weeks.
It really shows you like the roller coaster and why those time frames are so crucial for understanding what's actually going on.
Exactly. And speaking of bipolar, her breakdown of the difference between like bipolar 1 and 2 is like where those little details, they really matter. Like, did you know that for hypomania, those periods of like super energy and mood, they need to last for at least 4 days to even qualify for that diagnosis?
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah, it's one of those things that can be easily missed, but it's like so important when you're thinking about accurate diagnosis.
Totally. It just makes you realize how much, like, we might not even be recognizing in ourselves or others because it doesn't fit that, like, stereotypical image of what we think something is supposed to look like, you know? And speaking of things that don't always present in, like, the most obvious ways, her discussion on OCD and OCPD, that was big for me.
Yeah, that's a really common point of confusion because a lot of people, they kind of like lump OCD together with just liking things to be organized.
Right.
But what Dr. Pam does so well is she explains, like, yeah, someone with obsessive compulsive disorder, they might be really into organization, but they're also acutely aware that their obsessions and compulsions, they're a problem. Like, they're the ones who are seeking treatment because they're bothered by those thoughts and those behaviors.
So it's unwanted,
Yeah,
yeah.
exactly. But with OCPD, it's different, right?
Yeah, what's the main difference there?
So with obsessive compulsive personality disorder, it's like that need for order and that perfectionism, it's really ingrained in their personality. Like,
Yeah.
it's not just a preference, it's part of who they are. And oftentimes they don't even see it as an issue.
Okay, so they're not necessarily seeking treatment like I need to change this about myself.
Right, exactly.
Oh, that's so interesting because I'm thinking about that example she gave of like the person meticulously organizing their pantry,
Yes.
like spices alphabetized, cans, like perfectly lined up, and they genuinely don't get why anyone would do it differently.
Yeah, and that's such a good example of how OCPD can play out in a really like concrete, everyday kind of way.
For sure, yeah. And it also makes me think about how we talked about those terms, like egosyntonic versus ego dystonic. Because with OCPD, it sounds like that's like so much a part of how they see themselves. It would be really hard to be like, oh yeah, this is a problem.
You're hitting the nail on the head. That's exactly it. That's a perfect example of what we would call an egosyntonic disorder. It means those behaviors or thoughts, they're seen as acceptable to the self, whereas most other disorders we talk about, like OCD, those are ego dystonic. The individual sees it as a problem, as something separate from themselves.
Okay, that makes so much sense. And it makes me think about how much more challenging it can be to treat personality disorders in general, right?
Oh, absolutely. Because if you don't think something's an issue, you're probably not going to walk into a therapist's office and be like, fix this.
Right. You're not seeking treatment for it.
Exactly. And that's something that, you know, Dr. Pam returns to several times in this session, that importance of understanding the nuances of a diagnosis and how that plays into like how you approach treatment and support.
It makes a huge difference.
Huge, yeah. And it's not just about like the disorder itself. It's about recognizing those more subtle presentations where things aren't always as obvious as they might seem on the surface.
And speaking of things not always being as they seem, I was really fascinated by her insights on like the personality disorders, specifically antisocial personality disorder, because I think there's this misconception that it's just like disliking people.
So common, yeah.
But she really challenges that like quite a bit.
Yeah. And one of the things she said that really stood out to me was she pointed out that even serial killers, who often, you know, we think about those traits, they still engage with their victims, often in very, like, disturbing and distorted ways. But it's not that they lack social interaction.
Right. It's not that they're like complete loners. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's the lack of empathy, the lack of remorse that really characterizes that disorder.
Wow. That is a really good point. It's like a good reminder that often there's just so much more beneath the surface.
Absolutely. And that misunderstanding, it comes up with other personality disorders too. Like take schizoid personality disorder, for example. A lot of people, they kind of equate that with disliking people.
Right, right.
But in reality, individuals with schizoid personality disorder, they just genuinely prefer solitude. Mm-hmm. It's not that they're like afraid of social interaction or that they dislike people. It's just that they genuinely prefer to be alone.
That's such a key distinction, though.
It is.
It's really about understanding like the motivation and the thought pattern behind it, not just the behavior.
It's about going beyond those like surface level assumptions and digging deeper into the complexity of like, you know, what makes people tick.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It does make you wonder how many just like misunderstandings happen when we don't have those nuances, you know?
All the time. I mean, that's what's so important about what Dr. Pam is doing. It's about increasing that understanding.
Yeah. And I thought it was so interesting how she connected like those disorders back to even like childhood experiences. She was saying like untreated conduct disorder can sometimes develop into antisocial personality disorder later in life.
Which is kind of a chilling thought, right?
It is. Yeah.
Like how many diagnoses, if we intervene earlier, could we, you know, change that trajectory?
That is such an important point. And I mean, speaking of like this applying to more than just adults, she also talked about how, you know, the DSM, this isn't just for adults, right? This applies to kids too.
Absolutely. And in fact, like a lot of the diagnostic criteria, they present differently in kids. Like she spent a lot of time talking about ADHD, for example.
Which makes sense because it feels like everybody's talking about ADHD these days.
Right. It's so prevalent in kids. But as Dr. Pam was explaining, there are a lot of misconceptions about it.
Like what?
Well, one thing she stressed was that for a diagnosis of ADHD, the symptoms, which we all know, inattentiveness, impulsivity, hyperactivity, they can't just be present in one environment. Like they need to be evident in multiple settings, like both at home and at school, for instance.
Oh, okay. So it's not just like, oh, they can't sit still in a classroom, but then at home, they're fine.
Exactly.
Okay. So it's about looking at the whole picture, especially with kids.
Absolutely. Because context is everything, right? We can't just tick off symptoms on a checklist. We have to look at the bigger picture, what's going on.
It's like a puzzle almost.
It is. It really is.
Yeah.
And speaking of looking at that bigger picture, she also brought up another good point about kids who might be, you know, labeled as struggling in school, for example.
Okay. Yeah.
She was saying that if a child's having difficulties, but then like excels in certain subjects or on certain types of tests, that might indicate something like a learning disability rather than ADHD. Like maybe they really struggle to sit still and focus during a long lecture, but then they thrive in a more hands-on activity or with visual learning.
So it's really about making sure you're looking at all the possibilities.
Exactly, because these diagnoses, they're not one size fits all. Mm-hmm. And they definitely manifest differently in kids.
It's so true. Man, this is really, it's so fascinating. I love how Dr. Pam emphasizes that, like really understanding the DSM. It's not just about memorizing these facts and figures. It's about, like you said, observation, really understanding the nuance of how people behave.
It's about recognizing that every individual is unique and their experience is going to be unique as well.
Totally. So we've talked about like the importance of those time frames when you're thinking about diagnosis. We've talked about the complexities of like the personality disorders and then the unique challenges of like even diagnosing the stuff in children. What other like insights did she give into this whole world, this kind of intricate world of the DSM?
Well, one thing she kept coming back to was the fact that the DSM itself is always evolving. Like our language changes, our understanding of mental health changes, and the DSM reflects that.
Oh, that's right. Like how Asperger's isn't even a separate diagnosis anymore.
Exactly. It's all considered part of the autism spectrum now.
Right.
And she also mentioned how the term hypochondriasis that's been replaced with illness anxiety disorder in the DSM-5.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's hard to keep up with all the changes sometimes.
I know. It really highlights how important it is to stay updated, especially for professionals in the field.
Oh, for sure. So besides like those terminology things, what else does she say about how complex this whole diagnosis thing can be?
Well, she really emphasized that it's not enough to just consider the symptoms themselves, but we need to look at the context in which they occur.
Oh, can you give an example of that?
Yeah. Like let's talk about panic disorder for a second.
Yeah.
So just because someone has a panic attack, It doesn't automatically mean that they have panic disorder.
Right, because I feel like we throw that term around a lot. You know what I mean?
We do.
Oh.
But as Dr. Pan was explaining, while a panic attack is a symptom, panic disorder involves this, like, persistent fear of having another attack.
Oh, okay.
Which can lead to these really significant changes in a person's behavior. Like, they start to avoid situations where they think they might have a panic attack, mm-hmm. and it starts to really impact their life.
So it's not just about the presence of the symptom itself, but how that symptom is then, like, bleeding into everything else.
Exactly. It's about the impact, not just the event.
Wow. I mean, it does really sound like detective work when you think about it.
It kind of is.
Yeah.
Just like a detective gathers clues to solve a case, clinicians, they use all sorts of methods and information to try to arrive at the most accurate diagnosis.
And that's why observation is so important, right? She talked about that, like paying attention to both what someone says, but then also their body language.
All those nonverbal cues can tell you so much about what's going on internally.
So even someone saying, I'm fine, their body language could be saying something totally different.
Exactly. Which is also why it's tricky. Because so many of these disorders, they share these overlapping symptoms, you know?
Mm.
Like someone with social anxiety might avoid social situations, but so might someone with agoraphobia. So it's up to the clinician to really tease those apart.
That makes sense. That also makes me think about how she used those terms, egosyntonic and egodystonic, to explain, like, how people view their own symptoms. Because she really emphasized that, like, what makes each of these diagnoses unique is how the person experiences them.
Right. Like, she said, most disorders are egodystonic, meaning the person experiencing the symptoms is like, get this away from me.
This is not me. This is not who I am.
Yes. Whereas personality disorders are often egosyntonic.
Meaning
the person with a personality disorder, they don't necessarily see it as problematic. It's just part of who they are.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And that probably makes it much more challenging, not only for, like, the people around them, but for, like, treatment.
Exactly.
This is so insightful. I love how she takes something that could be, like, very clinical, like the DSM, and makes it, like, you know, engaging.
She's just really good at that. Her passion really comes through.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we've covered, like, time frames matter, context matters in a diagnosis. We've talked about the complexity of personality disorders and this, like, ever-evolving nature of the DSM itself. I feel like we're just scratching the surface.
Well, there's so much more. And one of the things that she gets into is how these diagnoses are actually categorized. And understanding those categories can be so helpful.
Oh, like you mean like those personality clusters.
Exactly. Dr. Pam talked about how, you know, organizing them this way helps us understand those key traits and behaviors that kind of go with each one.
Right. It's like cluster A. Those are the ones that are like often described as like odd or eccentric.
Exactly. So that's like your paranoid, schizotypal personality disorders.
And schizoid, that's a good example of one that, like, we were just talking about where it's often misunderstood.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about disliking people, like Dr. Pam pointed out. It's more about this genuine preference for solitude.
Yeah, like wanting to be alone, not necessarily being afraid. Like, there's a difference.
Huge difference. And then you move into cluster B, and that's where you get into those personality disorders that tend to be, like, a bit more dramatic, emotionally erratic.
Okay, so that's, like, antisocial, borderline, histrionic, narcissistic.
Yes. And she gives some good examples of how those might actually, like, show up in someone's life. Like, someone with histrionic personality disorder might be really, like, overly dramatic or attention-seeking.
Oh, okay.
Whereas someone with narcissistic personality disorder might have that, like, real inflated sense of self-importance.
Right.
So it's all about understanding those key traits and then, like, how they actually show up in someone's thoughts and behaviors.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Okay, and then there was like a cluster C, right?
Yes, cluster C. And that's like the anxious and fearful cluster, as Dr. Pam put it.
Okay.
So that includes avoidant, dependent, and obsessive compulsive personality disorders. And remember how we were talking about the difference between obsessive compulsive personality disorder and obsessive compulsive disorder?
Yes, huge, huge difference.
Big aha moment.
It was.
But it's a critical distinction, and it really highlights that need to, again, look beyond just like the surface level and really understand the nuances of each diagnosis.
This has been like actually so interesting. Like, I feel like we're just on the tip of the iceberg here with this whole topic, you know. It's so vast.
Yeah.
And it's always changing. But Dr. Pam does such a good job of like running it down to earth and making it like, you know, something that we can all relate to.
Totally.
And I think one of the things I appreciate most how she approaches this is like she always brings it back to like everyday life.
Yeah. Like that quote you were saying like about like taking the test into your job, even though your job has nothing to do with it, really.
Exactly. Like, understanding the DSM isn't just for clinicians and people who work in, like, the mental health field. It's about, like, developing this deeper understanding of, like, just human behavior in general. And then, you know, you can apply that to your relationships, to your work, to, like, just how you see the world.
And I feel like ultimately it's about cultivating, like, more empathy and compassion for, like, both ourselves and for, like, everyone around us.
100%. Yeah. And I think one of the things this really highlights is just that, like, you know, we all exist on a spectrum.
Totally.
There's no one size fits all when it comes to mental health.
Absolutely. Like, we all have our things, right? Like, our quirks and our challenges, and just, like, having an understanding of this stuff, I feel like it can help you navigate all of that with just more, like, self-awareness and then also understanding of, like, the people around you.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it.
So as we're, like, kind of coming to the end of, like, this deep dive into Dr. Pam's session, like, what would you say are the big, like, takeaways here? Like, what do we really want people to, like, walk away remembering from this conversation?
I think the big takeaway is that, like, understanding the DSM, it's not about, like, memorizing a bunch of diagnoses and, like, trying to slap labels on people, you know?
Right. It's not about putting people in a box.
Exactly. It's about, like, developing this much more nuanced understanding of, like, what it means to be human. Like, there's so much more to mental health than meets the eye.
So much.
And I think, you know, Dr. Pam's approach, it really encourages us to approach this with a sense of, like, empathy and curiosity and to a willingness to look beyond those surface level judgments.
Yeah. Like, everyone has a story.
Exactly. And those stories are complex.
And it's about remembering that this knowledge isn't just about, like, other people out there.
Oh, that is such a good point. Because it's really easy to, like, you know, get caught up in thinking about how these diagnoses apply to, you know, someone else or, like, that person over there. But the real power of, like, all of this is when you start to turn it inward. You know?
When you start to really think about yourself.
Yeah. Like, how does this apply to me? What are my patterns? What are those little quirks that I have, or even, like, those bigger struggles?
Because none of us are immune to this stuff.
No one. We all exist somewhere on that spectrum of human experience. And, like, just acknowledging that is huge, I think.
Totally, yeah. Because then it's like, okay, I can approach myself. I can approach other people with a little more compassion, a little more understanding.
100%.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think this is something that, like, Dr. Pam, she makes this really clear that, you know, knowledge is power, but it's how we use that knowledge that really matters.
It's not about, like, using it to separate yourself. It's about connecting.
Yes. And it's about recognizing that our mental health is just as important as our physical health, right? Like, this is something we should be able to talk about just as openly and honestly.
Oh, absolutely. Like, breaking down the stigma and creating a space where everyone feels safe to, like, reach out for help and support when they need it.
Exactly. And, you know, understanding these nuances of the DSM, like we've been talking about, I think that's, like, a huge part of that.
It really is. Man, this has been this deep dive. It's, like, given me a whole new perspective on this, like, on mental health, on diagnosis, on just understanding human behavior, really.
Me too. It's been so fun unpacking all this with you.
Likewise. So as we kind of wrap things up here, was there anything else that really stuck with you from, like, Dr. Pam's talk? Anything you want to, like, leave people with to, like, kind of chew on?
Yeah. You know, I think one thing that, like, just really resonated with me was, and she said this several times, was just, like, the importance of asking for help when you need it.
Yes.
It sounds so simple, but it's huge.
It is. There's no shame in saying, hey, I'm struggling here. Whether it's, like, you know, you're dealing with a mental health disorder or you're just going through a really tough time or you just need someone to talk to.
Exactly. And I think her talk, like, it did such a good job of illustrating that, like, you know, understanding these diagnoses, it's not about labeling yourself or other people. It's about recognizing that, like, we're all in this together.
We are. We're all just human. You know, we all have our own, like, stories to tell.
Beautifully said.
Well, on that note, I think it's time for us to, like, wrap up this deep dive. But before we go, I do want to leave you with a final thought. As you go about your day today, just take a moment to, like, think about the people that you're interacting with. Like, what are their stories? What kind of challenges might they be facing that, like, you might not know about? And remember, it's not about diagnosing them. It's about approaching each interaction, each person you meet, with empathy, with curiosity, and with that genuine desire to see the world through their eyes for a little bit. And maybe, just maybe, that's how we can start to, like, break down those barriers and create, like, a more compassionate world for all of us.